Love. Love. I know you can hear me. You see, we've known each other a long time.
Peace.
I guess right now you've got the last laugh. I know I abused you.
Check.
I took advantage of you. And I used you selfishly. Apologize now. You see, because after suffering so much, I know that I was wrong. You're the only one I can turn to because I misused you. And you're the only one that can straighten it. You see, love, I can't sleep. Even eat. Don't go anywhere anymore. Love, I'm begging you to help me.
All right.
Real subtle with that. You can do it,
yeah, that was interesting. That was a very interesting choice. Peace, y'all. This is the Views from the 7 podcast. This is your guy, Spence. I'm joined with my homeboys, Ivan,
aka Positive Pete,
Skinny.
Yeah, yeah.
And we are here with an amazing brother. We've been in here quite a while before we even pressed the record button. And if you guys could hear the conversation that we had before we even pressed play. What do we call you?
Imam Mustafa or Mustafa Yunus. The title is Imam.
Imam. Okay. Would Brother Yunus be?
That's fine.
I can roll that right off.
That's fine.
Brother Yunus. Before we even start, you are very knowledgeable. Very, very knowledgeable. And I guess it warms me a little bit because you don't find many elders who are so open to talking to will we be considered the youth?
Yes.
Depending on how I feel that, how I feel that morning when I roll out of bed.
Yeah, so where did you get your start? For hearing you now, and you told us you didn't go to college.
No.
It's incredible. Where did you get your start? What was the spark that said, I want to dive into not just Muslim, but all religions?
I'll try to make it a short, easy answer. When I was young, I was bullied.
Okay.
I'm from Detroit. And chased home every day. Also, I began, as Ivan mentioned, I like movies. So as I began to watch these movies, The Diary of Anne Frank, which was a very important stepping stone for me because I realized I got bullied, but who could make my powerful grandfather and father hide up in an attic? Mm. I couldn't imagine who could have done that. So I went to the library, and that was a big trip, several miles through dogs and bullies, to find out about these people who were terrorizing adults. Mm. And I was stunned about the Holocaust. I always have been. Then I realized something else. I want to travel.
Yeah.
But I can't travel if I'm constantly afraid to walk out of my house.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I wondered what made these guys in my own neighborhood, what did they derive from making me afraid and unhappy? What do you get out of doing that? Mm. So I went and learned how to box.
Mm, okay.
And later I took up martial arts. And because I thought maybe I was just a coward. Because back in the day, you just knocked a bully out, and that was ended it.
That was the end of it.
But I didn't realize that. So that's what triggered me, watching the movies, seeing all these exciting places, all these amazing individuals, so adventurers, and going to different islands. And I said, I want to do that, but I can't do that if I'm afraid to leave my house. So I put myself in a position whereby I could at least take care of myself. But I also realized something else. I dislike bullies. as I got older and began to investigate religions, spiritual bullies as much as physical bullies. And you see those in the church and in the mosque. They know just a little bit more, and they can make someone very uncomfortable and unhappy. So that kind of triggered me. I wanted to travel and see things. And so that was really the movies. And also that process of bullying that I thought was a bad thing really was a good thing, because it began to develop my psyche.
So you seen the movie Diary of Anne Frank?
Yes.
First, before reading the book?
Yes. I saw the movie years before I read the book.
Okay.
You
know. Speaking of, like, on the movie tip. So I was told that Casablanca is the number one movie of all time. Do you agree or disagree?
Usually the movie that ranks number one is Citizen Kane by Orson Welles.
I heard that was up there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. And Casablanca is an interesting movie because it had no script.
Oh, wow. Oh.
They had no script. They were recreating it all the time. But that's that creative minds that existed then. And it's strange when you watch it as an adult and realize there's not a lot to it. But Citizen Kane is a more remarkable movie because Orson Welles was a remarkable filmmaker.
Okay.
Citizen Kane, he achieved his greatest success when he was about 23 years old. Orson Welles followed that life path. That was his greatest success.
Do you hold Citizen Kane up there as the number one movie?
I do, and for one reason. Some of those movies, when I saw them, I was a young man or a child.
Yeah.
Okay.
I have gone through the whole progression with Citizen Kane.
Okay.
In my 20s, in my athletic powers, in my 30s, as I began to develop intellectually, in my 40s, as I began to physically decline a bit, into my 50s, into my 60s, now close to 70s. So I've seen that whole range of being a young, powerful man like Willie Mays and Muhammad Ali were at one time, to now needing a cane. My daughter wanted me to ride around the market in a basket. You know, I said, when that happens, I just stay home. I'm not riding around the market in a basket.
Yeah.
So I've gone that full progression.
Yeah,
so right. Films, I've traveled that whole thing. And I got a chance to travel. Religions came later because I was baptized June 1st, 1968. June 1st, 1968. No, no. June 1st, 1960, I was baptized in Detroit. Okay. And I never felt a connection spiritually, but I was curious about Jesus.
Yes.
You know, because his properties were those that I wondered why the brothers in the neighborhood, my own neighborhood, didn't have those properties of being kind to people, trying to help you out. Why make somebody unhappy when there's nothing in it for you?
Right.
Right.
No money, there's no nothing. Nobody's putting you on TV for bullying me. So at that time, I was Michael Craig Richards. I didn't become a Muslim until I was past 40.
Okay.
Okay.
I was older. I was about 42.
So you started your journey started in Christianity, as all,
yes.
Like all the majority,
yes,
mm-hmm, of us. Okay, and you say it didn't fulfill you.
When I would leave the church, the pastor would always shake everybody's hands, and I happened to look at him one time, and I said to myself, "This guy don't love me. I don't think he even knows who I am or cares." Mm. And so, no big deal. But I said, "I'm not feeling this." So what happened, hope I'm not jumping too far.
No,
no,
good.
No, no.
Come on.
But what happened was I had seen The Diary of Anne Frank. I later sort of saw some other Jewish movies. The Nazis disturbed me, and they disturbed the way they're building up again now. But what I did was I went downtown to the Detroit synagogue. It's still there. I was about 20, 21.
Okay.
And I went inside, and there was only one person there, and he almost raised his hands. He thought I was getting ready to rob him. He said, "What do you want?" I said, "Well, I want to start learning about Judaism." He said, "Nobody here. Write your name down there, and I'll have somebody call you." Well, he did. Like a long story short, two people called me. One called me and asked me about some things about the Bible. Ecclesiastics, he asked me about. I knew about Ecclesiastics. Then he had a younger person call me.
Okay.
They invited me to come out to Highland Park, Michigan, one of the places where they built one of the first masters. I didn't know that at the time. But I went out to study with the Jewish community at Temple Israel in Detroit.
Okay.
I stayed there for 3 years, never converted to Judaism, but the young Jewish guy who took me under his wing was a major benefit to me.
Okay.
At one point he asked me, he said, "You don't feel comfortable in the Baptist church." He said, "What about the Methodists?" I said, "What's Methodist?" He said, "What about the Episcopalians?" I said, what is Episcopalian? He said, what about the Mormons? He said, what I'm asking you is maybe there's another Christian denomination you feel comfortable with rather than coming out to the Jewish community. I thought he was going to say, I can't teach you anymore at that point. That's not what he said. He said, he just continued teaching me. But he gave me these references, Methodists, Mormons. So I studied with him for 3 years. And a lot of our studying consisted of walking around and us just having conversations. At one point, we kind of drifted apart. We remained friends, and he passed away about 20 years ago, I guess. But I started going around to different cities. So in Boston, I studied with a Episcopalian minister. I asked him and his wife, if I clean your church and your kitchen, will you teach me things out of your book? Will you answer these questions that I might come to you? Wow. So they gave me some books, and I'd read the books and asked him to explain these different things, why it differed from Catholicism, why it was different than the Baptist church.
Yeah.
I did that for about 3-4 months. The next person I think I got in contact with was I was washing dishes, making my money around the country, and was a Buddhist. He was from Laos or something. I think it was from Laos. And I said, can you teach me about Buddhism? He said, yes.
Was there anything, Judaism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Was there any, did you still feel that, was that unfulfillment?
Unfulfillment?
Yeah, did you feel that with that?
You know, I wasn't so much looking for a religion. I was just trying to expand more of a philosophical base than a religious base. I don't think I was looking directly for a way to worship God. That came a little bit later.
Okay.
And it came in Detroit because I was asking the Nation of Islam about joining their group. And they told me about Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I said, well, that's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for, at that point, I was looking for deity. How do you worship God? It's when you come down here, they had that way of talking. You come on down here to the masjid, to the mosque, and you'll know. Listen to what the Honorable Elijah told you, and you'll know about God. Yeah. So I said, well, that's not really what I'm looking for. I mean, I know the racial thing. We've got the same race.
Yeah.
But there's something else I'm looking for. Then I began to put the Judaism and the spiritual aspect of the quest together.
So do you consider yourself a theologist?
And I don't know that I have a right to consider myself anything. I don't have any titles.
Okay.
But I do know that I think it was Langston Hughes who said, even if I opened the door, and I knew that that meant instant death, I got to see what's behind the door.
Mm.
I heard that. Mm.
You see, I'm not going to live a life as a Muslim and not understand.
Okay.
Or as a Christian or a Jew or anything else. There's something behind. I always felt there was, after I got older, that there was something behind this legend of Noah, this legend of Eunice or Jonah. That's why I took the name Eunice. If you remember in the Bible, all those layers of darkness that he came out of. And I recognize that both for myself personally, but for my own people.
Okay.
That we were under so many layers of darkness. So I took that as more of a metaphor than an actual historical reality.
Okay.
Yeah, so I had recognized the layers of darkness I had come through, and Jonah came through that layer of darkness and the body of the whale, that layer of darkness of the ocean, layer of darkness of the dark sky, all these things to actuate some level of comfort and peace. Well, I began to study, I couldn't call it Egyptology, but I began to read all the books I could on Egypt because I saw some connection with that big fish. After I saw that movie I had mentioned to Da Vinci, The Egyptian.
Mm. Okay.
The Egyptian was something. And so in those things that they now give too much detail and not enough detail to, they talked about the big fish. They talked about the man consumed by it. But what I learned in my teens was that big fish was your physical body. That represented the physical constraints that we all have on us.
Okay.
Our lust. Our jealousies, our angers, our fears. If we don't, I think it was Ip Man, or I think it was Ip Man who said that if you don't conquer those things, a life of 100 years is not long enough. Mm. If you conquer them, a life of 5 minutes is more than enough. You're free. You're aware.
That's tough.
And so I recognized if I could get to that point where I felt that I understood why the Nazis would do this to women and babies, why the brothers, black guys in my neighborhood would do this to me, coming in my grandmother's store and still seek some kind of pleasure out of them tormenting me and chasing me home, okay, making me afraid to come to school. So these things began, I think, to come together, human cruelty. I found out later that some of my uncles beat my aunts. I found out about a friend of mine once. And that's, I guess I ramble, but I'm going back over that because I hated bullies growing up. But later, as I became more spiritually in tuned, and especially when I became an imam at a masjid, those spiritual bullies, the ones who use the Bible, the ones who use the Quran to terrorize their families, to justify domestic violence, all these different things to make other people unhappy, for what? So, of course, there's reasons, you know, and people study psychology and understand narcissism and so forth. Yeah. There are technical terms for it. But like I was talking to Dante, there were ancient teachings on these things. The first person to commit mass murder was Hercules. So the Greeks talked about these aspects in ourselves that we later began to brush over and isolate into stories. So that was kind of what got me started. So the Diary of Anne Frank.
So with the thing with the bullies and the men beating other women and the children, you came up in a time with the Black Panther Party, and that was a part of the Black Panther Party where they mistreated some of the women within the Black Panther Party.
Now, I don't want to make anybody angry, I know some of the sisters, because for some reason people have called me, and I don't know if it's my Facebook post or what, but some of the sisters have told me that they tell their girlfriends, the minute a brother tells you he's conscious, run, don't walk.
Mm. But why that word?
I've tried to understand this generation. Well, you said the Black Panther Party.
Yeah, within the Black Panther.
That was in
Black
my generation.
Yeah.
But I didn't join anything. I didn't join the Panthers, didn't join the Nation, didn't join Judaism. I just moved on my own.
But I know within a lot of time, power, a sense of power, feeling as if you were powerful, sometime gave men think that they had the right to dehumanize women or, you know, whatever with the child.
The child.
You know, mistreat everything outside of men. So I know what you speaking on bullying and all that, that's what made me ask the question.
Yeah,
time of you coming up.
That was my trigger.
Seeing stuff like that. Yeah, okay.
So, finish saying that, because I think that helped me to understand.
Oh, so within the time of you coming up and you seeing that, the bullying, like you seem to be a protector of women.
Women, children, those entities who don't seem to be able to either verbally or physically defend themselves. For some reason, they've fallen prey to, and I don't want to sound like I stayed in college, I've just read a lot, but narcissistic personalities,
right,
who seem to derive energy and strength like a vampire from brutalizing and terrifying someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for some of the sisters I've encountered over the last 20 years, they use the Bible, the Quran, the Talmud, being an atheist, anything. They'll use anything. So that set me on. I had a friend. When I became 21, I celebrated because I could drink.
Yeah.
Not because I could drink alcohol, but because I could go to the bars in Detroit and I could ask the older seniors, who be my age now and older, what do you think about Elijah Muhammad? Because I knew they were his contemporaries. I was just learning things from newspapers and books.
Yes.
So they had worked, some of them, with Elijah Poole at the plant. And so I usually ask them, I'd say, sir, can I buy you a drink? Sometimes they'd say, I'm waiting for somebody. And if they weren't waiting for somebody, they'd usually take a free drink. Yeah. So I'd buy them a drink, and I'd ask them these questions about Freemasonry. So, you know, I've heard about Freemasonry, Prince Hall Masonry, but I've never, you know, been in it. I learned about Freemasonry from the old men in the bar. Freemasonry and also the Shriners. So I was always asking people questions. I still do.
Absolutely.
Always asking.
That's great. I was always taught to, you know, study everything, but don't join anything.
Oh, you did, you too.
I'm just now getting to where I don't necessarily study as much as I used to, but I do pay close attention to the things that I don't necessarily agree with.
Yes. Yeah.
The most. I want to know what my enemies are thinking.
Yes.
I want to know I want to know what the people that don't necessarily like me, I need to know what they're thinking. But I used to, you know, I used to really, really, really study religion as you. And at some point, it kind of felt overwhelming. You know what I mean? It's almost like you almost forget how to have a good time because you're so stuck into thinking almost rebutting what you're studying, and it can get you to a point to where you're angry all the time. And if you don't find something to I can't think of the word, if you can't find something to take away, it's almost like when a police officer come home, right, after a long day of whatever he's doing. If you don't find something, and unfortunately, you know, they go into pills and alcohol and so forth. But if you don't find something to take away those thoughts in your mind, they can consume you.
Decompress.
There you go. Yeah. Thank you, man. You let me ramble enough, but you gave it to me.
I was thinking to him, like, what words are you looking for? Decompress.
Yeah. But so a great mind as yourself, I could see a lot of organizations trying to take advantage of that, because you, in my opinion, are someone I would see if I was having an organization and would say, I need him. What stopped you from not falling into that trap?
You know, I'm going to say real quick. I met my, I don't know if you would have cut this out or not, but I met my second wife in Detroit, 1972.
Okay.
I was married. So when I talk about adultery and things, there's a verse in the Quran says, I absolve not myself.
Yeah.
But when I met my second wife, I said to myself, I can't let her get away. Mm. This is a strange one. I didn't see her again for 3 years. I had her number written in my book. I was living in Boston then, same with the Episcopalians and a couple of other groups. But I didn't see her again until 1975. But 72, I went out to California to study the occult. I want to learn about witchcraft and voodoo. Mm. That's a long story, crazy story.
That's a story I want to hear about.
So in 75, I just ran into her. I kept going to the library she worked at, and I couldn't find her. I couldn't remember her last name, and I ran into her near that same library. Well, what kept me balanced was Debbie, because she was just as remarkable a human being as I thought. She was a librarian out here for 30 years. And she was what everybody who claims to be a Muslim, Christian, Jew, what they claim to be spiritually, she was. Mm. She was that. She was as kind and as had the heart of a social worker. So, but she always told me, just like you were pointing out, she said, Michael, she said, can it just be a movie? Yeah, does every movie have to be analyzed with some backstory?
Yeah, see, that's how I am. They get on me often because I can't just watch a movie for what it is. I see the narratives. I see the, like you pinpoint, the certain music they use, certain lines they use, certain gems or quotes. These things people throw in a movie and you would think, oh, it's just there.
You catch the Easter eggs.
Yes, and see, with me, it's like the movie they had come out called Eyes Wide Shut. Mm. Did you see that?
I haven't seen it, but I've seen it.
Okay. I never recommended it to anybody. A friend of mine said, I just saw the worst movie. It was the worst written, worst acted, stupid. He said, you may like it. So I watched it. I bought it. Okay. Intriguing movie. I'll just leave you with this. There is a video that some of my younger friends just introduced me to called Blame It on the Alcohol.
Okay.
Okay.
You familiar with the song?
Probably. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The video too?
Not the video so much, but the song.
Yeah. See if you can pull up the video, because there's a parallel in that video with Eyes Wide Shut.
Okay.
Mm. And for you who Look for the backstories in films. I believe you'll see it. But Debbie helped me to stay balanced because she was a fun, happy, sweet person. So that kept me from becoming overly somber. And I never got angry because, you know, maybe you found too, it's not the cultivation of our journeys. It's the fact that we know we're on a journey.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we don't wallow in the material world. We're not looking to sleep with everybody we can sleep with, drink as much as we can drink. We're actually understand that we're on a journey. This is a quest.
Yeah.
And even if we don't discover the unknown land, if you're on that your whole life, you never get bored and you should never get angry because it's a blessing to be awake. There's a quick story about the Buddha. I think it's apocryphal. I haven't been able to find out where it was true. But one of his students asked him, "Are you an angel?" And the Buddha said, "No, I'm not an angel." They said, Are you a saint? He said, "No, I'm not a saint." They said, "Are you a teacher?" He said, "I'm not a teacher." And I guess they wondered, "Well, why am I following you? Well, what are you?"
Yeah.
He said, "I'm awake." To be an awakened human being is a goal. To understand what lays behind the structure of what passes. One of your questions was about religion. Religion is just a term. 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, this was not what people were doing. Once the Abrahamic faith, once Christianity became under the control of the European, the Catholic Church, and then later the Protestants, all the energies and spirituality of the people of color was being crushed out. Once the Europeans began to conquer the lands and the minerals in other countries, they wanted something more.
Yeah.
They wanted their souls. They wanted to be able to control their minds, what they thought. Whatever we think is good, whatever we think is bad is bad. So you have some Christians now who don't like Muslims. I tell them, "What are you upset about Muslims? How many of your grandparents were killed by Muslims? What danger are you under from Muslims? Ain't nobody told you that we're dangerous except for these people who have been lynching, hanging us with crosses around their necks." So they lead the whole world. And they're again through film. They tell them in other countries about what we are. And then we have those who support that narrative with their music. At one time, we were sending Miles Davis, Duke Ellington, classy men, not perfect men, but classy men who gave us a powerful narrative on the stage.
Yeah.
Same year, Anne Frank came out. John Coltrane put out Giant Steps. Miles Davis put out Kinda Blue.
Okay.
No jazz like that since. Mm. A lot of jazzy guys, but no jazz like that really emanating since.
Yeah. What about Kenny G?
Okay. that's a trick question. I'm not going to criticize Kenny G. And see, that's what they're doing now. I get upset about people like, because it was interesting, Brother Dante pointed out that sometimes the senior members seem to be criticizing the younger manifestation of how they their presentation. And it's not even so much that. I get disturbed sometimes because they have dumbed our music down so that whites can do it.
Completely. Mm.
They could not imitate Miles Davis. I don't care how hard they blew, how long they studied. They couldn't imitate John Coltrane. Not then, not now. But sure, you can produce an Eminem.
Yeah.
You say you can produce these white girls and go up there and dance. You can get Jerry Lowe up there jamping around. There was a performer named, maybe you heard of her, her name was Hazel Scott. She was married to Adam Clayton Powell. She played two pianos at once, not like Alicia Keys tried to imitate and honor her by doing much different. And she also did something to put it in the white folks' face, I think. She played classical music. And she said, "I can play classical music, but can you make it swing?" And then she hooked it up to boogie.
Oh, so she was talented.
She was out of sight, and she was an activist. She would not play any movie that put her in a costume of a maid or a prostitute, anybody that would disgrace her race. Now you can get these brothers and sisters, they will play anything. Pimp, drug dealer, prostitute, beaten prostitutes, they'll play anything for film time and the money. Now this was an era where she said, "I'm not playing anything to disgrace my people." This is back in the 40s.
Yeah.
They ruined her.
So we're on this path of music and
movies.
No, elders and what we've allowed our white counterparts to do, right? But couldn't we argue that the elders and our older generation allow the dam to flow open when you guys let Elvis do it?
Well, we didn't have much control over Elvis, but I listened to Elvis. I liked Elvis's music. I liked all music. If it was, he was a music talented guy. For a white guy, he was pretty talented. And even then, I didn't buy Elvis's
black
music.
Music.
Yeah, but I didn't buy Elvis's music. But I did listen to it. My sister was a big Elvis fan. I listened to it with her. Mm. But something else happened. I'm not going to mention that. I'll mention that off camera. But Motown. The reality behind these performers in Motown was quite ugly.
Yes.
Quite ugly. By me being from Detroit, I knew people who knew people. I didn't know them personally because I didn't associate with many people.
Yes.
But so those aspects of music, I mean, you talk about the older ones letting it in, we were up against a very formidable enemy. Carter G. Woodson and Deuce Muhammad Ali said that once the African-American gets his refinements at university level, he will be no longer any good to his own people.
Whoa.
Mm.
Once you, I interpret that, this is just my interpretation, once you have put yourself into that debt going through, once you have become a CPA or a lawyer,
yeah,
you want to make money.
Yeah.
And like I tell some of the Muslims, but when we do this with our children, they have to go to a white, a Mormon, a Jew for their living.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to live next to me over here on F Street. They didn't go to college for that. Yeah. They want to. I've talked to some of the brothers that I work with in different sessions and stuff, and they very openly, I want to drive a Volvo. I want to change it in every year. The girls have told me, said, I didn't go through school. They told me that I asked them about love, that generation. And they said, well, if you mean that, you know, just die, do or die for some brother that's got bad credit, and I don't want to have to go through college and then not be able to get a house. I want to travel. I want to go to Europe a couple times a year. So he has to have the same degree I've got or better. Mm. And the brothers have said, one brother told me, he said, I checked their credit score before I get that involved. I said, that's interesting. I said, because we used to take buses together. Yeah. And we're very happy at it. And some of the sisters told me, well, I'm not taking a bus with anybody anytime. Oh, and man. I'm certainly not doing that as an adult woman. There's one young sister, I like her very much, but we were, our cultures clashed. She was much younger, and she told me, she had red-bottom shoes. That's the first time I ever saw red-bottom shoes. I said, your shoes red? I said, you never seen red bottoms? I said, no, I never saw them. So I take it your wife never had any. I said, not my wife. But she said this was her lifestyle. So she goes to Spain twice a year, Europe. And she said, this is what she wants. She said, but she asked me a question. I think it was a serious question. She said, when I go to Spain, Madrid, Barcelona, I don't see wealthy Spaniards driving by poor Spaniards on the street and saying, oh, my poor people. She said, how did poor Negroes get to be my people and my responsibility? I said, interesting. I don't criticize anybody for what they say. I just want to have their feelings on it. But she was very interesting.
But you saying that, it's a question that Dante had asked somebody online earlier today. About
I was thinking about the same thing. Yeah. Shout out to the Popular Misfits.
About when blacks gain their education and everything, and like you said, once they get to that point, they feel as if they're the black elite.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It was about the conversation, the frame of the conversation we were talking.
It was about
fraternities and sororities, and the question was framed as, you know, once you guys get these colors and you guys get these degrees and, you know, you attain this status, do you guys consider yourself the black elite?
Deuce Muhammad had some writings. He went down three layers. He said, because a writer named a politician named Henry Berry had said, among other things, a long quote, but they used to take one quote out, that we have closed all the doors by where the Negro can get light.
Mm.
He said, if we could do more, we would.
Yeah.
Now, based on that, Deuce Muhammad Ali, he came to this country in 1921 to draw African Americans out of the church into Islam, not so much just for spiritual reasons. He said, one, the Negro cannot continue consuming alcohol the way he's consuming alcohol.
Okay.
So he consumes too much alcohol for his power within his own society.
Mm.
He said, of all the people, we know people are starving to death on the planet. He said, but of all the people who pass salt across the table, pass me the salt, pass me bread. The Negro in 1920, he said, the worst diet on the planet. the worst. This is in 1920. He had started a journal called the African Orient Times, and so he solicited information from people of color all over the world. This is how he did a lot of his studies. So his point was that they had to get away from those things. So he examined three organizations whereby the Negro might gain light. First, the church. Second, Prince Hall Masonry. And okay. third was what W. Du Bois coined, I think, in 1911, the Talented Tenth. As he went through these things, he said, he gave the limitations that he felt were in the church. He said, there is no light for the Negro here. Then he went to Prince Hall Masonry. He said, this is a place where they should be studying the spiritual side of Scripture, philosophical side of Scripture, and they can begin to put these things together with those who've studied the theology. He said, there is no light for the Negro here. Mm. Then he studied the Talented Tenth, and there he came with the same conclusion. There is no light for the Negro here.
So according to him, where would the Negro find light from?
He put together, and this is a system that I'm trying to develop possibly into a book, because I've found pieces, a blueprint that he put together for the Negro to become a Muslim. And when you analyze the blueprint, it's the Nation of Islam. 5 years before there was ever a Nation of Islam or an Elijah Muhammad.
So he laid the blueprint for the Nation of Islam.
Yeah, he said you had to sit them in front of you like students in a classroom in chairs. They don't need a Quran. In chairs. He said you must teach them hygiene because that was taken away from us. You must teach a woman, a black woman, how to honor and love a black man. They took that from us. Mm. You must teach a black woman how to love and honor a black man, how to love and honor a black woman. He said, they took that away from us. We must reestablish what a mother and a father is, not by a term, he said, but by what this pillar is that a child must have between these two pillars, father and mother. It's a polarity. You have to have it. Okay. He said, we have to reestablish that. He said, we have to teach them grammar. They must know tense, past tense, present tense, future tense. They must speak well and clearly. He also said something else I find very striking. He said that if the Negro continues to smoke cigarettes, drink alcohol, and try different types of drugs, he said the colonizers have the money and the genius to perfect a drug to which they will not have an immunity. Crack cocaine. He predicted that almost 100 years ago.
Jesus.
Mm.
He said they will perfect a drug to which the black man does not have immunity.
Mm.
Because he was basing this being born in Egypt and being raised in England on the Boxer Rebellion. So they've already tried this. It was not like he didn't have something to go on. Yeah. They tried this with opium with the Chinese. Mm. So when you mentioned about the, my generation and before, these were the things they were up against. Alcohol. He said that he never saw such brutality as he saw in the streets of New York, Detroit, and Chicago with the police. With gangs of whites jumping on blacks for no reason. And when the police came, it was the worst thing that could happen because the police joined in. He said, and heaven help the black man who was taken into custody at that point. Mm. All of these observations that he made, this was at least 1920, all these observations. So his thing was that they had to stop drinking. They had to have honor between the sexes. So the nation developed a wonderful level of courtship. I was never in the nation, but talking to them, like yes. I've talked to others, courtship, how men and women come together,
yeah,
and the penalties for violating these rules of courtship. Okay. I've talked to sisters of your generation, and one in particular, she told me we talked about how we would approach women for dates and so forth, and she said, well, you wouldn't believe what passes for an invitation to a relationship now.
I believe it.
Yeah, I said that.
Netflix and chill, baby.
Yeah. She told me. I said, yeah. I said, I did not know things had gotten that bad.
Yeah.
She said, yes, they've gotten that bad. No respect for our women. I tell people, and there again, even people my age tell me, you act like you're older than me, and I'm 90. Any of these guys who stand on that stage and scream the B word about their own daughters, sisters, wives, mothers. No people in the history of mankind have ever denigrated the women of their own race the way they do. Mm. I mean, it's just never been done. Nobody, I don't think nobody thought about it. My assessment is those who used to be able to say that about our women before who can't get away with it now, they pay them. They pay them.
Before we started recording, you spoke on with the women, what your mother and father taught you as far as opening the door for the women, shutting the door, make sure you lock the doors for the woman and all that. How much of that do you feel is, like, neglected? Because I know my parents never taught me that.
Well, it was mostly my grandfather. My grandfather okay. taught me how to wear a hat. Okay. He put a hat on my head one day. He said, "You too old to be walking around like that. You see, when you go to church and stuff, you wear a hat."
Yeah.
He said, "But when a lady comes in, if you don't take it off, you tip it. You let her know that you're acknowledging her. That you're acknowledging her as he didn't call it the womb of the boy. This is a fancy Islamic term that we use. He said, you acknowledge her presence, that she is a lady, a woman. He said, it doesn't make any difference if she's some highborn lady, any lady. He said, and if you're in an elevator, you take that hat off.
Mm. Do you feel that because we've failed, I don't even think we have, and I'm not trying to be rude when I say this, but I don't think we have to do that anymore mm-hmm. to get women, right? But do you feel that the lack of acknowledgement that black men have against women and vice versa mm-hmm. Is the reason why there is such a divide?
You know, I don't know. I like I said, I try to ask people your age group yeah. what they're seeing out here now. You know, what constitutes love? What mm-hmm. constitutes romance? How do you make your approach to get a young woman's attention? What length do you go to? See, I know what it was in my generation.
What was it? Would you mind telling me?
Well, they used to call it game. Okay. You used to be able to talk to a girl. Yeah. You used to have to be able to walk up and separate yourself from the rest of the men who were making the same approach.
So yeah. Now, if you in your heyday,
yeah.
How would that? I want to hear how that would go.
Well, you see, if you were always in confidence, because I was short and I was stocky.
Okay.
So, I mean, if you got Terrence Howard or some tall, angular athlete coming in, you always had that, you know, you might lose that, not have to open your mouth. But I know that me and others, that did not stop us. There was a song by, I think Luther Vandross sang it, and he sings that even if I get rejected, yeah. at least I know I shot my shot.
Okay.
You know, yeah. you go up there to the girl and you ask her. One of my friends used to laugh at me because I go to a party and I say, he said, "Don't you go in there asking nobody about the news. Nobody cares about Walter Cronkite. Or the news.
At all.
Nobody cares about what book you read."
Yeah.
I was in high school. Sometimes I asked a girl, "You read any good, interesting books?" Sometimes that would work. They would say, "I did read something. I just read something in my English class. It's a pretty interesting book." Yeah, that was my thing.
Okay.
You know, and yeah. there again, I tell you, when I was studying with the Jews out in Palmer Park in Detroit, right across the street from there, my wife lived, my future wife, second wife.
Yeah.
I didn't know her, and I didn't know anything about her living out there. She was a librarian. I went to get a book on the Zohar, the mystical treatments of Judaism, and I had taken two buses to get there, and I got ready to get the book. I found it on my own, and then I told the girl behind the counter, "Never mind. I left my ID." She said, "You seem like an honest guy. I'll check it on my ID." That's how I met my wife.
Mm. So she checked her book out for you.
Yeah. That's the first time I met her. Okay. And she lived right across the street at the Jewish temple I was studying at.
Okay.
Right across the street. Mm.
I know my father say within his time, my uncle was, they called it rapping.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. he said my uncle used to write down exactly what he would want to say to a woman when he meet a woman. And he would study it in the mirror.
Okay.
So my father used to sit and study it. Yeah. Well, that's what my dad said. That's one reason why I play Isaac Hayes rap is because my dad had me listen to it. But he said that's what they used to do. So my grandfather came to Las Vegas in 1940, and he stayed right down the street, like it's not even two doors down from where we are now. And my grandfather always bring up how his parents would say, because he had already had my grandmother pregnant She had just had one child, and she was pregnant again with her second child when he came here. So she said, they said, well, you're going to come back here, and you're going to make an honest woman out of this woman. You're going to come back. And my grandfather always speak on how important a woman was at that time. And like you say, to, you know, tilt your hat, to do different things. And we don't acknowledge our women in that way at all now.
Oh, you have to tip your hat, but not at all.
My, it don't fit in my first wife got pregnant. I don't want it.
And it was just a matter of what the date was going to be. We got married. There was no discussion of any other alternative. You take care of the baby, I'll give you money to take care of it. Or we're going to do what? It was just a matter of when's the date now.
Mm. Yeah. You know, like it was.
There was just no other. We didn't even think in terms of anything else.
And that's what my grandfather always said. We didn't think of nothing else. It was marriage.
You were born in what year?
1950.
Okay, cool. So anybody born in the 80s?
Oh, yeah. I know. I understand. Yeah. It's
my father was born in 1955.
But when you're talking about him writing down the rap, well, think about it. Even the animal kingdom, I'm not sure if it's a peacock, but the animals show off for the woman.
That is a peacock.
Yeah, they spread their, they show what I got. Yeah. And so there's a natural desire for the male to present to the female
absolutely
what I am. So rap was one of the ways. Yes, you could lose out to some tall 6'5" basketball player, but not automatically. Not automatically.
Without a fight, baby.
If your rap was strong, that's you had a shot.
That was if your rap was strong, you got a shot. Now, I didn't have a strong rap, but it was unique.
But if she read books, you was in the house.
If she read books, I was all right.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. It's kind of like the movie.
Dude from Love Jones.
The Inkwell, they did it. The Inkwell, he did rap.
Contemporary movies, a movie I like very much is Brown Sugar.
Okay.
Yeah, I like it.
Because
that's
where I first learned really about hip-hop.
Okay.
By the time hip hop came out, I was an adult. I was always had my musical taste set, and Debbie listened to some of it, but I didn't really listen to it very intensely. But in that Brown Sugar, she explained to me the emotional attachment that the young people had on to hip hop.
Okay.
You see, I felt that. I've watched it several times.
Yeah.
Because I had that attachment when I first heard jazz when I was very young, 10, 11 years old.
But you were in your late 20s when the No.
Brown Sugar was older than that.
You're in your late 20s when hip-hop kind of was in its infancy, so you should have... No?
I was into jazz. By that time, jazz was pretty much... I went to Earth, Wind, and Fire, jazz.
Yeah.
I saw Earth, Wind, and Fire, I think, at Pine Knob in Detroit in 76, maybe.
What was the first hip-hop song you heard and you took it, you digged?
I'm probably going to have to say, and it's only because it's one of the few I remember, Grandmaster Flash. Was that hip-hop?
Yeah, yes.
Don't push me because I'm.
Oh, pushing. Okay, yeah.
I like the whole theme of it.
Not bad. That's not bad.
I like the whole theme of it because, and then there was another one.
Please don't say Sugar Hill Gang.
Sugar Hill Gang. Oh, that's the one.
I understand why you don't.
Yeah,
I get it.
Remember.
Yeah,
the hip. Then, even though I was older, I liked Heavy D very much.
Okay.
In fact, Heavy D was a breath of fresh air.
I sign off on almost all of my correspondences. I'm wishing you a peaceful journey.
Okay.
Mm.
Okay.
I'm wishing you a peaceful journey.
Jazz, who are your top three? Thelonious Monk?
No.
Miles Davis.
Elton John. John Coltrane. And even though I don't listen to him as much, I'm a Jamal.
Okay.
You know, but John Coltrane, and when I like maybe more than all of them, I just don't play him as much because the recordings are not as tight, is Charlie Parker.
Okay.
Because Charlie Parker's the one who, when John Coltrane, when they were young and they heard Charlie Parker, they couldn't believe what they were listening to.
Okay.
He was like Imhotep, who built the first pyramid. Forget about the ones who built later pyramids. He showed them the first pyramid.
Okay.
What was the last movie you really enjoyed? And what was the last movie where you was like, there's a lot of messaging in this?
Black Panther?
No, not. I wish I could say Black Panther. I like Black Panther. And there's some reality for me. And some of the, my people in my age said, you're right. I tell them, Wakanda existed. Wakanda existed and was called Kemet, Egypt. At one time, everything went to Egypt. Plato told them, you want to learn dancing? Go to Egypt.
Egypt was the biggest port in the world at one point, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And everything went there, philosophy, mathematics. So at one time, everything was in Egypt. So in that sense, but the movie that I like the best. There were a couple. One, it's a movie they call They Live. Inexpensive movie. Made back 1980-something.
Is it a horror?
No, not exactly.
They Live.
I've heard that. I've seen it. Of course, The Matrix. Because The Matrix deals with that this world is not real. And that's what those people, 2,500, 3,000 years ago, they went inward to discover the reality of this world. What they came out with in those Asian countries like where the Buddha came up and so forth, with the Upanishads, India, what they came out with is what they're now calling quantum physics. So the quantum physicists go to the Upanishads and the Rig Veda when they're trying to solve problems or ask questions. So now they have CERN in Switzerland where they're doing all these high-level experiments in quantum physics. And what's the symbol in front of CERN? The dancing Shiva. Mm. They know something, or they wouldn't have her up there.
That's a long time to go back with quantum physics.
Yes, because these things, like in The Matrix, the unreality of this world. My first wife told me last time I talked to her, she said, Michael, can you believe that we're 69 and got grandchildren now? I said, no, son, I can't believe that. She said, it doesn't seem like time could have passed that fast. We're 69. We were in high school together.
That's crazy.
And it doesn't seem like that amount of time could have went by.
So yeah.
I say sometimes it's like you went to sleep and you woke up and you have these memories that like they were poured in your ear. Not like you actually lived them, but they were poured there.
Yeah.
Quantum physics suggests different things about the time continue, but the quantum physicists themselves, Niels Bohr and others, Uspensky and them, they go back. They went back to quantum physics. They took it back to the Upanishads and the Rig Veda. You see, so the people who went inward to discover these aspects of reality, now they're going outward with the mathematics and the telescopes, and they're discovering some of the same realities that they discovered in the in India.
Okay.
Anything recent?
Oh, ongoing. These things now they're discovering about what they call entanglement.
Entanglement is what?
Where two things are created together, and even if they're separated by a light years, they will respond together.
You see? So they're tethered.
Yeah.
So did you see Us?
Us. Was that by...
the Jordan Peele movie.
I saw Us.
Similar concept.
I don't think it was as well done, but similar concept, yeah. And I like Jordan Peele's work. I like his, was it The Twilight Zone he did now?
Yes, TV show.
I think he's done a fine job. I've watched The Twilight Zone since the very first episode in 1959.
Twilight Zone used to scare me.
And I've never stopped watching them.
It used to scare me.
Yeah.
I see that swirl on TV. It's time to go to bed.
It had this scary aspect.
Did you ever get into the black cinema and stuff like that around the time?
I didn't like the what they used to call the black exploitation films.
Yeah.
I watched a couple. I liked
That's skinny. That's his genre right
there. That's my thing.
I liked I'm getting old. I liked what was it with
with who?
Rudy Ray Moore?
No, Ron.
Ron O'Neill. Superfly. You like Superfly?
Largely because of the cinematography and the music.
I just watched Superfly for the first time, probably either the beginning of this year at the end of last year.
Don't do it.
And I was highly upset.
Don't do it.
I was highly upset. And mostly because
I mean the old one, not the new one.
Yeah, the old one.
Okay.
And mostly because he spoke so highly. So I'm like, okay, now that it's on Netflix, let me check it out. And I was like,
Well, it doesn't carry. Some movies don't carry over. My nieces, when I got them to watch The Exorcist.
Okay.
They laughed.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, they laughed. The Exorcist was the only movie I ever watched that scared me.
Exorcist scared me too.
Yeah. Had I read the book like I had started to do before I saw the movie, I would not have seen the movie.
Similar to Candyman. Candyman scared me, and then my kids watching be like, Dad, you were scared of this?
Yeah. So maybe really? By you seeing it so late after it was filmed.
I think so. I'm trying to catch up on a lot of things.
Yeah. I like the cinematography that Gordon Parks put together. Individual scenes, them exchanging dope and the still shots.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like those. Okay. I like that very much.
Yeah, I like Gordon Parks' work.
Yeah, see, I like that. So,
my favorite movie was in 75, and I still think it's
Cooley High.
Cooley High.
See?
Never seen
that one right there. I don't think it'll always be. It's a timeless piece.
I've never seen it.
And it, that won't change. See, for me, it was Citizen Kane. Yeah, so, but some movies are just so good, it's not a matter of just liking them. It's because they're that good.
Yeah.
I'm going to go watch Citizen Kane.
Yeah. Like Citizen Kane's on my list.
Yeah, Citizen Kane. Blanc.
I've never seen Casablanca.
And then do a little reading on Orson Welles.
Okay. Orson Welles. Yes.
Yeah, they ruined him and ruined that movie. He wrote it based upon Hearst, the owner of all these newspapers. Okay. And Hearst ruined him and the movie. Same but he was a fine filmmaker.
Okay.
And quite a thinker. Orson Welles said, we're born alone and we die alone.
Absolutely.
It's just this brief illusion of us. I'm sorry about that, brother. Should I have...
Oh.
It was just a brief illusion of us being with somebody.
Okay. Yes.
You see, and I used to, not worry, but I used to wonder, you know, what would happen to Debbie, my wife, if I'm not here? What would happen to me if I don't have Debbie? But what I was doing, I never stopped studying. And I tell people sometimes there's a certain amount of selfishness because I was constantly making all these crazy trips that she was financing and lectures I was attending outside of the state that she was bankrolling. And I feel guilty sometimes because I never bought my wife a house and she really wanted one. But I recognize, too, I think, that had I not done that when she passed away, it was not ordained that Debbie and I were going to be together. She got sick and passed away. It wasn't written that we were going to be together for 50, 60 years.
Yeah.
And had she passed away as young as she did, and I had not had some other preparation, I'd have been in pretty desperate shape.
Yeah. So you speak a lot of Debbie and, like, second wife. Do you feel true love is something you have to experience in life?
You know, I tell somebody, it's hard sometimes for the sisters and brothers to come together for a variety of reasons in Islam. And some of them have gotten older and they said, I'm just going to give up. I said, well, don't give up. And if you don't experience love, you've missed a great deal of the journey.
I agree.
Mm.
That's an aspect that can't be duplicated or substituted for. If you don't have it, if you don't experience it, I think you've lost something. But I mean, everybody may have other things that they have to experience. Our lives are mapped out, so to speak. But yeah, Debbie was, you know, quite a lady, and I realized that. I was aware.
Okay.
And so I, but that doesn't excuse leaving one wife
and
family
yeah.
for another wife and family. That's not, that's an explanation, but most certainly not an excuse.
Okay.
Yeah.
You see.
You speak of death often. Are you to a point where you think about mortality often?
Always.
And do you, earlier in this episode, you were saying that it's almost like the ultimate goal is to die free. Do you feel a lot of people, transition without ever feeling free? And how often do you think about your mortality?
Well, Debbie used to always tell me, she said, you think so much about death. You read these books, you know, you go to these different lectures. Because I used to slip into lectures years ago. I don't know if you can do that now. But I used to slip into lectures at different universities and sit there and take notes and stuff.
Mm.
I'd even lie and say I was a student. Because I look more of a student type than I do now. But I wanted to talk to some of the younger people, the people who were enrolled in colleges, to see if I understood what I thought I was understanding. I was reading a lot of books and I didn't know if I was understanding it or not. So that was my technique to do that. But I always thought about the end of this life because Shakespeare said it in one way and the Quran says it in another. I think it said all men are but actors on a stage and they walk on and they walk off.
Absolutely.
And I realized all of us have to leave. I saw my grandfather age and so forth. So I knew that was, I saw Willie Mays age. I remember seeing Willie Mays run center field, and then Willie Mays got old. So I recognize in my own observation death.
Yeah, I think, my ultimate fear is not death itself. I think I think about mortality almost every day, and it's not dying that I'm afraid of. It's what am I leaving that I'm not sure of, you know? You want to make sure your family is straight. You want to make sure that you've they carry on your legacy and your the value, morals and values from a financial aspect, these things are the things I think about. If something was to happen to me today, would my family be okay? I think that's the fear I have.
See, you came to that conclusion much sooner than I have. By the time I began to worry about those things, Debbie was gone. My children were grown. Mm. My son went in the Marines. He's had a lot of problems since coming out. I didn't think that way when I was your age. I was still, like I tell some of the people who say, well, I want to try and recreate some of those things you did. I said, well, for one thing, to get on that path, you have to have a large amount of selfishness. Mm. You have to think that that path is more important than anything else. To make this lecture in London is more important than, because Debbie used to tell me, okay, we can get your ticket for that trip, Michael, but should we pay the power bill first, or should we worry about paying it after you get back? You see, because it's selfishness. You can't stop and start. You can't all of a sudden say, well, I'm not going to get that book now. I'll just get it later, because it might not be a later. And her books that have taken that much money to acquire, trips, and Debbie was very generous with allowing me to do that.
Yes.
But like I tell the people who talk about doing that, I said, you can't stop and start this. You can't all of a sudden go to Disneyland and then pick it up when you come back. So if Debbie hadn't been that generous, I'd have lost a lot of leads that I tried to follow. And so I didn't think in terms of securing the family. I didn't have a good insurance policy. I didn't save a lot of money. And that doesn't make it right that I wasted so much of the family's income on these things. Also, I didn't go to college. So the money that I would have made being a college graduate, I never made. Mm. You see? And so my income was cut by that level of selfishness. And then later, even feeling that I had to go all these different places, and it's crazy, you know. But I don't know what I would have done if I hadn't done it and Debbie had left as early as she did.
Yes.
So listening, it sounds like you've been on this journey, this journey of discovery and knowledge for 60 years now. Do you feel like you have acquired, whatever it is you were searching for, do you feel like you found it?
If I died today, I would say that I understood, like I was saying earlier, I understood that I was on a journey. Right. I understood that I was looking for something. Some of the things I've found, I've tried to unravel what the prophets were. I understand what the Quran, the Bible says, but what laid behind the structuring of these narratives, of Abraham, of Noah? There's a structure that comes out of Egypt that can be identified as Noah. Mm. You see, noon, that noon sound. So I've tried to study all these different things. And at the end of the day, for those who believe in Christianity or Islam or the Abrahamic faith, in the end, God will tell you if you did it right or did it wrong. It's like Dante's Inferno.
Mm, okay.
You see, you may find out that you wasted a great deal of time, that you were always on the wrong path, that you didn't take care of your family, that you did not secure the things that you should have secured.
Yeah.
But this is the only way I can proceed. It's the only way I've been able to proceed since I was very young.
But not necessarily not necessarily where you're going to end up. But do you feel like now, like whatever it is, I was chasing something. I was on this journey to discover something. Do you feel like you discovered it? Whatever it is you were. I understand this journey is ongoing. It's continuing.
Yes, ongoing.
So I know you're still going. But do you feel like today, right now, whatever it is I was looking for, I found it.
Found some of it because last year, 2018. It was 2 years ago, 2018 in May.
Okay.
I was invited to come to Egypt.
Okay.
I went to Egypt. And that's a whole other story, but I got a chance to talk to one of these sheikhs over there. And usually just get 5 minutes. You know, you wait 3-4 hours, and you get in there, you get a chance to ask him one question. What happened was I went in there and asked him the question. I told him, I said, I'm very concerned about my people in America. We don't seem to have any cohesiveness. We seem to be in a very destructive process. Is there something you've been teaching here for the last 1,000 years or so that you could tell me or find out where I could find out how to pass this on to them? And he said, you know, I've met a lot of Muslims. He said, but most of them try and convince me how much Islam they know, how much Arabic they know. He said, you're the first one who's ever come here and asked me, how can I help my people? Mm. I spent 5 hours talking to him about African-Americans. Mm. The African-Americans, he said he had never heard of all these things.
And you normally only get, the average person only get
five minutes. If that.
You got five hours.
I've been in contact with him since. I'm supposed to go back again. I'm supposed to go back in November, but yeah. I couldn't make that trip.
I want to go to Egypt bad.
Yeah, see, and I never would have expected to have been going to Egypt because I didn't make that kind of money. But the trip was paid for. Mm. Everything was paid for. So I guess I'm saying that certain things have come up to make me feel like maybe it hasn't been a waste.
Okay. Mm.
You know.
Yeah, because I was almost going to compare it to sports-wise, like when Kevin Durant won his rings, right?
Mm-hmm.
He won them. Like, the ultimate goal is to win the rings, right? Yeah. And then when he finally got them, he still didn't feel fulfilled. So it was almost like I gained all his knowledge. Because, you know, I heard you, you know, I listened to you speak on your son when he came back from the Marines. And then with your, you know, with your wife passing at a young age. Sometimes hearing you at all, it's great for your legacy, but sometimes hearing you, it almost feels like a little regret there. Like, has all of this knowledge you've attained, everything that you've experienced, has it become a bit of a burden? Like, do you think I should have been here more?
You know, I tarry on that thought sometimes, and then and I usually let it pass, because it's like we talked about movies. When I first saw Yentl,
okay,
Yentl opened up like I was in a theater.
Okay.
I've watched Yentl maybe 20 times.
I need to write all these movies down.
You remember? You ever see Yentl?
No, I've never seen
Okay.
Yentl.
It was a musical, Barbara Streisand. Little
it sounds like a Jewish movie.
It's a Jewish movie. Okay. She was living in a time when they did not allow women to learn.
Okay.
Picture books for women was one of the quotes, the intellectual books for men, different ends of the bookseller's table.
Okay.
And I saw all these things about my people. The times we could not go to libraries, the brilliant minds that could not go to a university, could not get access to the books they wanted to read. So correspondences are part of what I've acquired, where I can see many different systems in just one story. Ancient Egypt opened up. Who Akhenaten was opened up. So those things that I've gained and try to pass on to others, make it seem somewhat worthwhile. And I hope that Debbie would be pleased with her investment.
Okay. So on that note, like listening to everything that's going on, kind of expounding on what Dante was saying, it sounds like as this personal journey you're on cost those around you a lot. The people around you paid for the journey that you were on.
They paid for it.
How do you sit with that?
I think about it frequently, and I realize that it was Debbie's fault sometimes, because I would just be sitting there trying to figure something out, and her question to me for almost the whole 30 years was, it seems like there's something on your mind. What can I do to make it easier?
Okay.
30 years. What can I do to make it easier? Well, they got this lecture in New York.
So she put the battery in your back, basically.
Almost always.
Okay.
I didn't go to her and say, I got to go to this lecture. She said, you're thinking about something. What's on your mind? How can I make this easier for you?
So did it ever cross your mind to just be like, you know what? She's paid it. She wants this house. She has things that she wants to achieve, or she wants for us as a family. And I know that she's paid the price so far. Let me not be honest this time. Let me take this sacrifice so that I can give my wife what she wants as opposed to what I feel like I want or I need.
You know, I did that, but it was very early on when we first got out here. She was working at the library. I'd take her on the bus to get to the library.
Yeah.
Then I would go pick her up at night, go back, take the bus back, and we'd ride back home. I don't like to see women walking around by themselves.
Okay.
At any rate, at that time, it came to my mind one day when I was reading through the Upanishads, Buddhism. I said, I'm sitting here doing this every morning, and she's working. I said, this is crazy. You can't do this. So I opened up the newspaper. I said, I got to get a job.
Okay.
But I had worked with my father for a year. I had only been out of work for about a year.
Okay.
I opened up the newspaper, and the Imperial Palace at the time was hiring everything. They opened up the big place. Everything was, all jobs were open.
Okay.
So I went to the Imperial Palace, and I told the personnel director, I said, if you hire me today, October 2nd, you'll be hiring me on Groucho Marx and Mahatma Gandhi's birthday. I know she thought I was crazy or drunk. She said, we'll have to get you hired right now. Well, make a long story short, I worked at the Imperial Palace for 25 years.
Okay.
I never would have done that for anybody but Debbie.
Okay.
Okay. Also, Debbie went away to get her master's degree in library science. She got her degree here, got her master's degree in Pennsylvania.
You have a degree for that?
Mm-hmm. You got to be a librarian. I mean, you can work in a library, but to be a librarian, you have to get a master's in library science.
That's new. Mm. Okay.
So wow. I'm glad that Debbie at least got to, I'm sorry about that.
No, you're fine. Okay.
I'm glad that Debbie got a chance when she passed away as a librarian.
Okay.
Not a library clerk.
Okay.
She also put on gong shows here in Las Vegas.
She
put on four gong shows, and they were brilliant.
Okay.
She put on art shows, best art shows I've ever been to from here to New York.
Okay.
So she did get a chance to stretch her artistic abilities.
Okay.
And I think that having a house was her dream, but it's not all as cracked up to be.
It's not.
It's, I mean, this was her dream, her goal. But I told Debbie, I said, I love you, I'll do anything for you, but I will not work a second job unless it's to keep us off the street. So there's too much I want to learn, too much I want to do. I'm not going to give 80 hours a week, 60 hours a week to a job unless we just have to.
Yeah.
So I tried to balance it out where she was not just left hanging with nothing.
Okay.
That she had. I told her, you might find this funny. The sisters may listen to this and may not. But I used to tell Debbie, I said, I want to make sure that you get a full education so that if you get tired of me or you want to get out of the marriage, you're not stuck like women are sometimes financially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she said, hardly leave you, Michael. Okay. She got her degree. And when I went up there for the graduation, she said, remember when you told me that when I got my degree, I said, yeah. She said, well, I got my degree now. I said, I changed my mind. She said, when? I said, right after I said it. I didn't have any, you know. So, yeah, but I tried to balance things out so that Debbie had a sense of fulfillment,
okay,
some kind of achievements. I thought they were more important than being a housewife and sitting up in a house, because I've seen too many women who have that, and they find, like most of us do in many cases, like Aesop's Fables, it was not worth what I thought when put all his efforts to get them grapes. They sour.
Yeah.
You know, so I just go ahead and let it ride now. I mean, it is what it is. There's no reason to worry about the past because that's gone. Right. Can't dread about the future, as they say, because that may never happen.
Yeah.
All we've got really now, and so I'm still working on those. I went to Memphis, Tennessee with a group and tried to give them some of those indications to look into.
Yeah.
You know, I never talk in absolutes. I don't have any absolutes, but just things you might want to look into, like the role of a mother and a father.
Okay.
Like I tell them, when that baby takes the mother in her arms, there should be something that leaves with that child that it can remember for 60, 70 years that reminds me of mom.
Okay.
So with that being said, do you feel you passed today, you've offered the knowledge to equip your children?
You know, my daughter works at a place called YAP. She does works with at-risk youth,
okay,
who've gotten themselves in trouble and need to get back into the system. I'm not sure if she I think she got it from her mother.
Okay.
But whatever she got from her mother, she can thank me because I picked her mother. I recognize that her mother was something very special. I'm not sure how I'm doing this, brother. Okay, I got that fixed. Yeah, so, but it's just the way it is now. I mean, there's nothing else to do. You can't unring the bell. It's just what it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Having this conversation with you, I'm it sounds like a lot of your spiritual journey, a lot of the journey that you've been on, also has been connected to cinema.
Yes,
a lot of the insight that you've seen, or a lot of the path that you've taken, it seems like was sparked by something you saw in cinema. How important has cinema been in your journey?
Very, very, because like you mentioned, I think earlier, those narratives, and those older movies, the writers were not, they were not Adam Sandler just trying to make a few bucks and make some folks laugh. They had been through some things. They had been through wars, Second World War, First World War, Jewish programs in Europe. They had the Holocaust coming up and then afterwards. So all these things were put into these stories, these some of these wonderful movies to convey so much. There were five movies. I have to send you the titles. I forget sometimes, but there's five movies I have together in this collection. The Egyptian, Meetings of the Remarkable Men, Matrix, Pi, has one other one. But they the protagonist is all, they're all asking the same question, why? In the Matrix, it was, what is the Matrix? What is this system? It's something not coming together. In the Egyptian, his question was, why? In Pi, his question was being developed, the spiritual journey through mathematics.
That's the guy with the tiger on the boat?
No, not that
one. Not Secret Life of Pi.
No, okay. Not Secret Life. It's just called Pi. Pi. Okay. It's a black and white movie.
Okay.
And then Meetings with Remarkable Men. He went out to search for knowledge. His name was G.I. Gurdjieff. True story. Yeah. So he was looking for knowledge. So some people, I think myself included, there's something about just having a preacher or an imam or some sheikh or some Christian scholar explain to me what reality is.
Okay.
So I want to find out as much as I can. Like the great philosopher Marvin Gaye said, what's really going on?
A little bit on our in our community, right? Especially over here, I think with me and Vinci, guess we're using our real names on this
one. Yeah.
With me and Vinci, when we drove up, the first thing we said was I had noticed this, the mosque right here. Is that what we call it?
Yeah, still calling mosque, it mosque. Yeah, same thing.
Okay. This along with the hundreds of churches on the west side, it just seems like a big melting pot, right? With you being here for the many years that you have, what's the problem? I know we're starting to see hints of gentrification. You put politics involved. You have out of towners buying up property around here. I would just expect, and a lot of this is put on us too. I would expect, and it's selfishly because I've done nothing myself. I would expect, because there's so many leaders, there's so many places of worship, that our area will be built up way more than what it is with our money and power.
A lot of us corrupted. In other words, a lot of us corrupted, flat out corrupted. Who is it? Marcus Garvey, or I won't quote, because I think it was Marcus Garvey. He said the white politician or businessman, he'll sell his people out for $100. Nigger would do it for a nickel, and still can't pay his power bill. Still can't pay his rent.
That's tough.
You see them all up there now. You see the Ben Carsons. These ones who got these big jobs at universities. All they want to do is sit up on CNN, and give all these 1,000-letter words and show you how intelligent they are. No one's really moving to make these kind of changes. A lot of people who've tried to make those kind of changes, I have a whole PowerPoint on political assassinations. And when you go through that, you find out a lot of those ones who tried to make the difference, they suddenly drop dead.
Paid the price.
Heart attacks, plane crashes. Louis Lomax was going to write a book long before this show on Malcolm, on who killed Malcolm X. His brakes went out in New Mexico. This book here, Dorothy Kill Gallen, she was one of the most successful journalists during the time of the Kennedy assassination. She said, she started investigating Jack Ruby. She said, there's something not right about Jack Ruby having that kind of access, no notes being taken by a person they thought killed the president. She began to investigate. They found her dead in her apartment from a barbiturate overdose.
Wow.
What is your, because you dive into something I'm interested in. What is your thoughts on both of these, the Malcolm X assassination and the lady right here on the cover? That was diving into the Kennedy assassination.
When I was young, very young, between 12 and about 18, all of a sudden I'm in school. They say President Kennedy got shot and go home. So they shot the president. So that's weird. I get home, pronounced him dead. It was several years later, but it seemed to me like next thing I know, Malcolm's dead.
They sent y'all home when the president was...
Yeah, it seemed to me that we were in an after-school class or something. Hmm. Next thing, Robert F. Kennedy was dead, shot by a Muslim, Sirhan Sirhan. I said, this don't even make sense. Then Reverend King was shot by James Earl Ray. I didn't believe any of it. So I began to try and get as much information on those, because I believe if you believe that these single gunmen did this, or the nation did it, you live in one America. If you believe that this was constructed by very real forces within this country, you live in a different America. That time, Fred Hampton, Johnny Cochran catches cancer, drops dead before you know he got it. There's so many
Eazy-E.
Of them. Eazy-E? Huh? Yeah, Eazy-E. All these people that tried, and no conservatives among them, all the ones that had these strange deaths that I went through, were all trying to reach down, pull up.
So it's kind of like we're living in a false reality.
I think so. And we have to operate within it. We can't just say it's not real and then just back off.
Yeah.
But there's something, like in The Matrix, he realized there's something not making sense.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at this world, but what is this structure that's going through?
So you've read a lot of books and you've watched a lot of movies. Is one equally as important? Do you feel books and movies is equally as important?
I think they come together, because when you travel and you've read, things are triggered. When I went to Egypt, like you talked about the community here, what the Sheikh told me, he said, the problems that your African-American brothers and sisters are having, he said, look around you. You look at the Great Egypt. Have you ever seen such poverty? Mm. No, I haven't. What happened to Egypt, he said. We talked about the Native Americans, maybe 70 million Native Americans between here and South and Central America, 400,000, a million left. What happened to all these people?
And because you spoke on Egypt as being a Wakanda.
At one time, it was Wakanda.
So the riches and everything was there. And now to go to Egypt, it was poverty.
I had never seen that level, because I had not been to that part of the world before.
A lot of those older Western civilizations seem to be in a similar state.
Yes, and I think some of that's natural aging.
Okay.
Look how old Egypt is.
I think about Greece as well.
Yes, Greece too. But as the Sheikh put the thought in my mind, I don't know that I ever had it before. He said, when did the Greeks ever have such bodies as those statues? Have you ever seen a Greek?
Mm.
Said, not really.
Greeks aren't big. They aren't big, are they?
Or muscular. Athletic in stance. He said those statues came from Africa.
Mm. Mm.
Now, he put that thought in my mind. I don't know if I ever had it before. But one of the points that I've later understood, or maybe understood even before, was that in Homer and the others, they told you that the Greek gods came from Ethiopia.
Did they?
They came from Ethiopia. They were honest about that early in Greece. The Greek gods came from Ethiopia, Abyssinia.
What did they say about Heracles?
All those were just renamed. They just took those gods' attributes and they stuck another name on them.
Yeah.
Mm. Sound like Christianity a little bit.
Yeah, but all everything. Yeah. So later with what Greece had done, the wonderful George G.M. James wrote the book Stolen Legacies. It's underread, skipped over, not ingrained. What he told you was all you need to know. That this Western world, this white world, has stolen the knowledge and put its stamp on it. Plagiarism.
Mm.
Yeah. Aristotle, he said, didn't write anything.
So they were the first.
They were the first. Later, in India, Max Müller, German scholar, he came along and said that a great migration came from the north, called Aryans, into India, and they created the Indian society. That was a lie.
Okay.
It was a lie. No migration came, but the Indians believed it. Many of them. It was another way of taking the culture of black people and making it white because it was too extraordinary what they found in India.
So okay, so knowing that, because from what I've understood from various things, we at one point we dominated. We were the first astrologers. We were the first seamen. We were the first. How do we lose our place? How do we allow a smaller group of people to assimilate all this power right in front of us?
Well, there again, no absolutes for me. So I don't want anybody hearing this and getting mad. My theory is that when you look at what happened with Egypt under Ptolemies, they created this guy Serapis, put a white face on it. Also, the white or Western mind always seemed to identify itself as a group. In Africa, they didn't identify themselves as black. They were different tribes, different nations. Yeah. Almost all the people in India, they identify themselves as either Hindu or something else. They didn't have a collective, but the European seemed to have had a collective. Yeah, we may not like the French, and the French didn't like the English. None of us like the Germans, but we can come together to put our foot on the black neck.
So in simpler terms, they unionized, and we didn't.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. They they understood that. And keep in mind when you ask about the older generation, from 1865 to 1965, that was the period when they got out of slavery, to 1965, they still didn't get proper housing, proper voting. They could not work in the construction industries. They were denied jobs in most other places and so forth. So they had a way of weighting down that black growth. I don't know if that explains why we didn't do better in an area like here. Yeah. Where we could have bought land, 40, 50. I'm not business minded, so I'm not guilty on that end. I'm guilty on many ends. I'm hardly not guilty. But where business is concerned, I never understood business.
Yeah.
I didn't think about buying land and investing. I wanted to have a bookstore, which would have been very easy to do 40 years ago. But I didn't even do that. So I don't know about business. I don't know how that, what should have happened here.
Okay, so what about you and the other ministers, and we have the nation up the street. What is the relationship between all you guys, or is it just your own little worlds in this big melting pot?
This is my little world right here. This is usually where I'm sitting at in here, unless I have to go out of town or something. I'm usually sitting here working with the kids, African-American history studies, but also try and teach them the art of listening and critical thinking. I don't know how many of them are going to go to college. Yeah. Critical thinking is very important. And I use some of the Quran in that. There's an ayah in the Quran that says, if I had only but listened, I would not now be in the hellfire. I told him, substitute that. If I had only now listened, I would not be in Sahai Desert.
Mm.
You see, I said, the Quran is not just talking to you about religious things. It's giving you information about your life. If you know what's right and wrong, and you follow what's right and wrong, you can avoid a lot of horrible problems. I use that movie Gridlock to my movies.
That's my movie.
The scene.
Now you're saying something I know.
Where he's talking about getting addicted.
Yes.
He said, we were out there with this white guy, and he gave us some alcohol. We used to get drunk. Then we took us out there. He gave us this cocaine.
Yeah.
He said, my buddies, he said, they got sick. They were throwing up all over the place. He said, when I hit it, I was in the womb. Mm. Instant addiction. Mm. You don't get a second chance. The Quran does the same thing. Alcohol and gambling are tools of the devil. And I tell the young people, devil, demons, iblis, these were the terms that the people 1,400 years ago understood. They didn't understand addiction. They didn't understand how this body chemistries and these kind of things. So that was the language that was revealed to them. The language is just the same now. You can mess around, experiment with your buddies and some cocaine, and you're an addict. You don't get a second try. Yeah. That's what he expressed in that movie. So I use that scene when we talk about that eye in the Quran, to explain you don't experiment with these things, because the first time you roll those dice up the table, just clowning around,
snake eyes,
you get yourself, you're addicted now to gambling.
Yeah.
So been through that. Those realities are there in all the books, the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse and Revelations in the Bible. Mm. These are powerful metaphors. You see, they're as real now as they were, maybe even realer now than they were 2,000 years ago. So I try and use the movies.
Yeah.
I try and use music and everything else to get them to understand what these narratives were conveying to you. Now, they have to figure out where they think these narratives came from. A divine hand? Who put these things together
yeah.
in this magnificent form that never ends? It's as transferable now as it was 1,400 years ago. Now, you think a man wrote it down and was able to do that? Or do you believe in God? But that's for them to decide. I don't yeah. try and push that. They know that they're Muslims, and maybe main Muslims or not. In the Christian church, there are those same narratives and metaphors. The problem is, for our people at least, and whites too, they don't live by these things.
Yeah.
They go to church. Maybe they tithe. They say, I'm saved. That don't mean they're not getting drunk on the weekends. It doesn't mean that they're not living in lives that would be considered as sinful in the Bible. Yeah. They don't mean
adultery
anything.
And all that.
So if these books are giving you the information, it's like I tell the young people, if I had but listened, I would not now be sitting up here in a jail cell. I would not now be standing before a white judge because they found drugs on me. You see, right. So these are things I want them to understand in a practical sense. And then they'll have to move into whether they understand it, where these revelations came from. They're there. It doesn't seem like a human being could have written them. So now you have to decide divine or happenstance. I mean, that's...
You speak like with the movies and books. What about documentaries?
Documentaries are very good. I put together a documentary. I'll give it to you guys to...
Please do.
You know.
Yes.
I did three forms of it. One form was targeted toward Muslims. One form was targeted toward seekers. One form was targeted toward Christians. I only have the one one version left now. That was the one I did for the mosque.
Yeah.
But take the ending out, because the ending is sliding. It can go to a Christian conclusion, to an Islamic conclusion, but it's just a
what?
Markup. It was not really a finished piece.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you can be as critical as you want, but I'm just saying I never really went back to do it again to make it refined and check all the.
It's just with you speaking on like so many different movies and books and you know your wife, love, and all that. It's like I didn't hear much about documentaries, and like when you spoke on the Malcolm X mm-hmm. documentary, and when Dante had asked you, you know, how you felt about it, and within your study of knowledge, within your whole life. So you got to see the Malcolm X's, the Martin Luther King's come up. Do you feel like, did you study their teachings too? To be like, okay, this part of Malcolm was whatever, or this part of Martin was whatever?
Whatever is true, I try it. Because I use a lot of quotes from the books that I...
Because now you got so many, you got documentaries on each thing. So yeah. You was actually able to say, well, I lived in this time. So you can watch something like that and be like, that's false.
I don't bother.
Okay.
With the Malcolm, I didn't watch it. One, because at this age and all I've tried to understand, I don't have the time sometimes to sit up there and watch someone else's interpretation to tell me who killed Malcolm. I know who killed Malcolm in my own mind.
Okay.
Same one who killed President Kennedy, same one who killed Reverend King, same one who killed Robert F. Kennedy, same one who killed Dorothy Kilgallen, same one who killed... Biko in South Africa, same one who imprisoned Mandela.
Yeah.
Same one who's killed people all around this planet.
Yeah. I think our generation don't understand, either don't know or don't understand how vicious COINTELPRO was.
That's right. Absolutely not.
And so that's, I have the same mind frame as you. It can't be, I'm not going to allow a documentary to put this
specifically Malcolm's assassination, into a box of just four guys just walking in there, yeah, in a whodunit.
Yeah.
It's not, it's way more complex than that.
I know you guys are tired of hearing
I'm so I can do this.
So I better get back in.
Yeah, we can wrap it up.
Okay, before we go, I do have another question. Because I hear you speak about the Quran a lot. I know from my personal experience growing up in the Baptist church, a lot of times they say, well, whatever answer you're looking for is in the Bible. Whatever you're going through, whatever answer you look for is in the Bible. Do Muslims feel the same way about the Quran?
They do. Many of them do not demonstrate it. When they get called in for different offenses within their families and stuff, I ain't going to the Quran to do that.
Yeah.
And when you're hitting your wife, you haven't gotten to the Quran to justify that.
Yeah.
And sometimes they try and pull that they do. But reading a book and understanding it and living by it are all different things.
Okay.
It's like one of the Buddhists I studied with, he said, "It's anybody can be a Buddhist. Are they trying to be Buddha? Mm. Are they trying to reach this level of humanity? Or are they just Buddhists?" Now you see the Buddhists committing acts of violence. You see the Hindus attacking helpless Muslims. In other places, you see Muslims attacking helpless other people.
Yeah.
Quran and the Bible and Hinduism don't justify those acts. So, yeah, they may be, you can call yourself any, I can call myself doctor. Yeah. I ain't no doctor. I haven't been to a university. I didn't get that kind of justification to say anything. So that's why I don't speak in absolutes. But you can call yourself Muslim, Christian, Jew. But each one of those has some kind of a standard.
Yeah.
And but with the absent standard seems to be forgiveness. I was telling somebody who was telling me the other day who's a Muslim, and he was criticizing Christianity. And he was also said he's a seeker of knowledge. I said one of the first laws, principles of the master teachers of 2,000-3,000 years ago, never spit on the path of another. Mm. You can teach your path. Nothing to stop you from doing that.
Yeah.
But you never spit on the spiritual path of another. Why? Because you don't know what brought him to that path. The tragedies, sorrows, mental illness, losses. Yeah. So you don't spit on another system. Yeah. You can teach your system and tell why you think it's a good system. But there is no justification for being unkind, cruel, disrespectful to a Christian, to a Hindu, to a Jew, all within Islam, those schisms and things exist. So yes, the Muslim, and I believe that it's there, but it has to be understood in the current time. So the Quran has an ayah that says, talk to people in a language they understand.
Yeah.
So if I'm running around talking to people in Arabic who don't speak Arabic, telling people about Iblis, you're not going to keep young people away from sexual activity because you call it a sin. It wouldn't have kept me away from sexual activity.
Yeah.
I wouldn't care if the devil was on the other side of the door when I left. So those things have to be understood, how this actually affects you, to take yourself down these dark corridors. And then you realize at the end of it, like most things, it really wasn't worth it. Mm-hmm. She wasn't all I thought she was. He wasn't all I thought he was. But now you're stuck, like I tell them, now you're stuck with the baby. Now your life is on a whole different trajectory. I said, if you had only listened.
Yeah.
So we have to talk to them, not in spiritual sense, but in the sense of what this will make of your life right now, here and now. There's a wonderful surah called Walasr, and it tells you that if you're sitting in a conversation with people and these principles are not being expounded, whether it's about sports or entertainment, if these principles are not being expounded, I tell them, even if they're all Muslim, salam alaikum, get up from the table, make your excuses, and leave quickly. Because improper suggestions come from all people, Muslims, Christians, Jews, they are not limited. But they can take you down a road, I think it was like in gridlock. He said he didn't expect his parents didn't expect him to be a drug addict.
Yeah.
Your life can turn in an instant, and it's just a mess.
I see. Yeah. I hear kids, and I've seen kids around here since we've been here. Mm-hmm. And right now we're in a I don't want to say era, but we're in a time where mental health is very important.
Very important.
Yeah. religion itself doing a good job at remaining spiritually and culturally relevant when it comes to such things? Because we're so used to just pray it off.
Yes. I hate to hear your moms tell people when they have a problem, you got to read the Quran more. You got to pray more. You got some man beating you up at home and beating the children. Pray more. I've never seen that to work. I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't work. I've asked brothers from the time I was about 20, 22. Had a friend tell me once, a girl we went to school with, he knocked her down, put his foot on her throat.
Jeez.
He wanted to know, said, Mike, so I need to get her some flowers or candy or something. He said, so what do you think I should get her? So I tell you what, let's have this experiment. How about if I grab you up in this bar stool, put you on the ground and stick my foot in your throat? Now you tell me from down there, how many pieces of chocolate
right.
will eliminate that humiliation? How many flowers will take away the pain? I said, now we'll have our answer, won't we? Mm. So this has been a shortcoming, maybe in a good point, because I don't parse in these areas. I don't believe in telling women to stay with abusive men. I've asked some of the imams who've counseled that. How about if I beat you up? Then how are we going to put this all back together again? Right. Go to somebody, sit there and talk about it? So these are very delicate issues, and they permeate all cultures and societies. I worry about my people because not many people do. Mental health is one of those big problems because underneath all this religion, there's mental illness.
Yes.
I'd never found that kind of comfort in praying it away or reading a book away. I read a lot, but I think that there's other solutions for that kind of emotional, mental, and physical pain. So I don't know if religion, at what point religion has addressed that. I think that it has for some people, Christians, Catholics, and so forth, and some Muslims. I don't look for that solution for me. I'm just not that strong spiritually, probably.
Okay.
So it's my shortcoming.
What? Anybody got anything else?
So
where would anyone listening to this and they want to
find you
or hear from you? You have a lifetime of knowledge.
If they want to send flowers, maybe. You can give them my phone number. if they get mean, just tell them, I think he's left town. I don't think he's still here.
No, we don't have those type of lists.
Okay.
But, if any, a mentorship or, just want to hear from you, where can they find you?
I'm usually right here. For better, for a beat down or anything else, I'm usually right here. I can give you a card.
Right here is right on, what is this? F Street.
No, yeah, I live on F Street, but this is on Morgan.
This is Morgan and F.
Yes. 7-Eleven Morgan Street. Mm-hmm. Morgan Ave, sorry.
Anything on social media?
I don't think I'm on social media. I mean, I'm on Facebook. that's about it.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
So if they want to hear from you, they got to come down here in person.
Well, they can call. I mean,
okay.
I don't have anything on
y'all
social media.
Call
I don't
them,
think
man.
I'm on social
media. Down there at 7-Eleven Morgan Avenue.
That's not
Facebook and social media.
Is that social media?
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's about it.
Okay.
Social media, your name on social media is Iman. No.
Iman
Mustafa Yunus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mustafa Yunus.
Yunus.
Yeah, and then Yunus, of course, like I said, is Job. Yeah. Not Job, Jonah. You know, so.
Okay.
All right.
So I hope it was of some interest or help.
I appreciate it.
Oh, man, we appreciate the knowledge.
Be your first
this
time
is a
here for me.
Great
yeah,
conversation.
I hope not.
Yeah,
I hope you guys are going to say, that old man is nuts. They need to do something about him down
this
there.
This is a great conversation.
Keep him away from the kids and women. I never remarried either. First 5 or 6 years, I couldn't even face thinking about opening the car door for somebody else. Or,
That's tough.
Yeah.
That's why I ask you, is it important to experience love? I'm trying not to experience that.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm running from it.
I can't. it definitely is not. It's like everything else. It's got some serious pitfalls.
Oh, man. Losing it.
Yeah.
Losing it is the
best. Yeah.
Getting it is one thing. When you lose it, boy.
All right, y'all. Till next time. Peace.
Peace.